Jones for the appellant, Mrs. Lutz for the appellate.
Morning, counsel.
Good morning.
Beg your pardon? Please, yeah. Thank you, Madam Clerk. I perhaps should have told you to just go ahead and we'd proceed without Mr. Burke. I thought it, in the interest of fairness, we'd go the extra mile. Go ahead, Ms. Jones.
Good morning, Mayor. Please, the court. My name is Lisa Jones, and I represent Corey Houston, the plaintiff in this matter. Ms. Houston, for the record, is in the audience today. I've also requested 2 minutes of rebuttal. Your Honors, Ms. Houston's evidence presented to the trial court of the sheer falsity and mendacity of Andrea Checks, Ms. Houston's supervisor, pathetic explanations for eliminating Ms. Houston's job responsibilities, entitled a jury to infer race discrimination alone.
From what? From what would the jury infer race discrimination on the record that was before the judge?
I would submit two issues, Your Honor. The strength of Ms. Houston's evidence with regard to how false, as to the falsity of her explanations, that defendant had articulated that the reduction in responsibilities and reduction in duties were designed to conform to the EPA contract. The evidence was clear, A, that the reduction in duties actually contradicted the EPA contract, number one. Number two, her performance evaluation was inherently false. And Ms. Check could not have an honest belief that that performance evaluation was a true reflection of Ms. Houston's performance. For example, the performance evaluation would say, "Oh, well, Ms. Houston does not try to get more responsibilities. Was not complaining about the fact that her duties were being taken away from her, was not showing initiative and dependability, when in fact the record is clear that Ms. Houston was fervently complaining about how Ms. Check was treating her, B, that her duties were being reduced to the extent that she wasn't a physical security specialist, but that she was essentially a document, some kind of document technical clerk. So those issues contradicted the Ms. Check's statements with regard to Ms. Houston's performance as she articulated in her performance evaluation. And as well explicitly misstated for the reasons that I just argued, misstated the nature of Ms. Houston's performance during the course of those few months that Ms. Check was supervising her. The absurdity and the extreme nature of how Ms. Check reduced Ms. Houston's responsibilities, as well as how Ms. Check treated Ms. Houston with regard to, for instance, the perniciousness of the character assassination with regard to Ms. Houston's trustworthiness. The fact that without any evidence whatsoever, Ms. Check admitted that She believed that Ms. Houston would not tell her the truth about certain things. There's no evidence to support that. Just the nature of, for instance, the fact that Ms. Check required Ms. Houston to have someone else come in and pick the lock on a safe that Ms. Houston was responsible for, the perniciousness of that character assassination went to the heart of Ms. Houston's, of the nature of what Ms. Houston did for a living. She wasn't a line cook for some cafeteria. She was a physical security specialist. She was a former military person who had a high security clearance, which entitled her to handle and view classified material. Trustworthiness was the essential nature of her job. And what Ms. Check was saying to Ms. Houston was, you are not fit to have that job, in essence. And there's no evidence on the record of that fact.
The difficulty is not that she didn't take, or the evidence doesn't support negative action. It is the causation that is the weak link. How do we know that that is racial prejudice as opposed to what your witness said in the affidavit?
Well,
the witness referred to personal jealousy of the relationship with the client, the agency, and with the favoring of the new hires over the holdovers. So what is it from which we're supposed to infer that the discriminatory conduct and negative conduct was based in a racial division rather than in those other grounds?
Surely, Your Honor. In addition to the extent of the strength of the evidence of the falsity of the explanations, there's independent evidence from Ms. Houston's co-workers.
All that I recall in that is that the worker said, I felt like she wanted black women to bow down to her. And that won't get you there. Is there objective evidence or any other evidence that it had a racial component other than your prima facie case, which is no longer a presumption?
Well, Your Honor, I would suggest that reading the affidavits and the statements by the co-workers and the EPA official, those statements were of similar character as the statements in by the witness in the Jankowski matter. They're particularly, given the strength of the falsity of the evidence of the explanation, that the nature of the evidence proffered by these co-workers and the EPA contractor were of similar nature and similar.
What is your other evidence besides that one statement in the affidavit that I referred to that has anything to do with race being the basis?
Well, there were two statements from co-workers, Vivian Porter and Ann Caffey.
Porter, I think, is the one who said that about the bend over to or bow down to.
Correct, Your Honor.
Porter, Caffey, what was Caffey's statement about race?
Caffey is the witness who in the interview with the EEO, Human Rights, Office of Human Rights for D.C., she's the one who said Andrew Check had a problem with black women. She thought that black women should bow down to her.
So that was Caffey rather than
Porter. That was Ms. Caffey, yes.
I had him back. What was Porter's statement then that would support racial? I mean, Caffey is just expressing an opinion. She has not offered any evidence of racial discrimination there.
But she was offering an opinion based on her contact with Ms. Check, which is no different from the opinions that were proffered in Jankowski case.
What was Porter's statement?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
What was Porter's statement that bore on the animus?
Ms. Porter talked specifically about the distinction between how Ms. Check treated Ms. Houston versus how Ms. Check treated Mr. Martinez.
Okay.
Of course, Mr. Howe discusses how Ms. Check treated Ms. and talked about the performance the substandard performance evaluation of both Ms. Houston and there was another.
That's Howe you're talking about now?
Yes, Your Honor, Ernie Howe.
Isn't he the one who said it was based on new hires against holdovers?
Well, he talked about how Ms. Houston and I believe it was Ms. Caffey who both received substandard performance evaluations that didn't make sense to him. And
what did he
stated
say? What did he say about animus or the rationale?
Well, he stated he didn't understand how there could not be any discrimination.
Didn't he go on and say he wasn't suggesting racial discrimination?
He wasn't in a position to know.
He really has any evidence of racial basis, is he?
He wasn't in a position to see on a day-to-day basis like Ms. Caffey did their interaction. But more importantly,
Caffey offered no evidence of racial animus. She simply said she felt like that Check had a problem with black women. He wanted them to bow down.
But that proffer, Your Honor, I would submit is no different from the proffer made by the witnesses in Joukowsky. And if I see that my time is up, but yeah. if I can say just quickly yes, Your Honor, that to the extent that Mr. Howe articulated some other potential motive that Ms. Check may have had, that was certainly not conclusive to evidence to demonstrate that there was to negate race discrimination. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counsel. We'll hear from the Eppley. And we'll give you back a couple minutes for a moment.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate that.
Okay. Mr. Butts.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Andrew Butts, representing the Eppley. With me is Alan Block. This is a case alleging racial discrimination. It comes up on summary judgment after evaluation under, the standards set by cases like McDonnell Douglas, Hicks, Burdeen, and Reeves. And after the initial rounds of the proffers of evidence, you come down to the question of whether the plaintiff can show that the reason proffered for the allegedly discriminatory adverse action was false or pretextual, and that the real reason was racially motivated. In this case, the trial judge very carefully considered the evidence that we just heard discussed and concluded that there was not sufficient evidence to show that there was any racial motivation and very little, if any, evidence undercutting the proffered reason. In this case, the alleged...
State the proffered reason. State the proffered reason.
Okay, the allegedly discriminatory act was a realignment of responsibilities that was considered to be a demotion. The explanation that the witness supervisor Check gave a deposition that the realignment was necessary in order to align the worker's duties with what was required of her position under the contract.
And the judge said that that wasn't accurate.
The judge said it was not completely accurate. The judge said there is a question about whether, if one looks at the contract terms as they're referred to in the record, that some of the changes in position didn't conform specifically, to the contract requirements. And plaintiff alleges that she was given fewer responsibilities than what was required under the contract, at least for the probationary period. So that's where the record is on that. The trial judge did not rest his decision primarily on that issue, but instead rested it on the fact that the record had no evidence of discriminatory conduct.
How do you answer opposing counsel's argument that the general statement about racism in the workplace was similar to that in Joukowsky.
Okay. In Joukowsky, you had a situation where some opinions were offered, but the court specifically, this was a gender bias suit. It was very much similar in the context of alleging a demotion in responsibilities. The court there gave due credit for opinions that were offered by the witnesses, but pointed out that there were specific examples backing up those opinions of actual events observed by the witness, of actual circumstances showing, racial or, in that case, gender bias. And so on that basis, the court concluded the plaintiff there could go to the jury and could show circumstances and facts, objective facts that could be disputed confirmed, and that the jury would have a basis for deciding what to do in that case. Here, in contrast, the three witnesses who put statements into the record, Ms. Caffey, Ms. Porter, and Ms. Howe, all had opinions, but the opinions weren't backed up by evidence at all. Ms. Caffey's opinion was that Czech had a problem with black women and expected them to bow down to her. But when it questioned, her statement does not contain any examples, any historical information, any anecdotes or let alone any pattern of factual information from which a jury could properly infer, that there was racially biased activity going on. Similarly, Vivian Porter, another colleague working under SecTech, testified that there appeared to be a difference in management between plaintiff and Martinez. That was the Hispanic co-worker who had a higher job rating and pay grade, but she never testified that there was anything racially improper, either in the demographics or in conduct. And by the way, the evidence is clear. This is a security staff that was predominantly African American, and yet, despite the fact that we had Ms. Czech, the supervisor, who was Caucasian, and Mr. Martinez, who was Hispanic. There's no evidence besides the general allegations the plaintiff made in this case that there was any kind of racial problem here. In fact, the record strong.
What about her challenge to her performance rating, a review?
The challenge to the performance rating, started with a notation to the effect that. She disagreed with the performance rating. As I understand it from the record, she eventually went and talked to a higher supervisor. And at that time, she suggested that there was a problem with discrimination. The supervisor's response, as the record tells it, was, perhaps you don't, do you understand what discrimination is? And although the record doesn't go into specific detail, I think the problem was that a plaintiff, being an African American, perhaps didn't understand that the law protects people from discrimination on the basis of race, and does not protect people, from discrimination just because they happen to be in a protected group. And I think that was the tenor of the conversation, and I think that's all that the record shows with regard to how that went. The plaintiff did not resign. She continued to perform her job for a considerable part of the probationary period. And then eventually, she was offered a higher-paying job elsewhere and decided to leave. Returning to the central issue here, we have one other witness, Ernest Howe. He was the EPA officer. He was a Caucasian. He testified that he had a problem believing that there was a difference in treatment. But he believed that it was likely something that had to do with SecTech favoring people they'd hired rather than people that they'd held over from the previous employer. The record doesn't go any farther in that regard. But clearly, Mr. Howe, like Ms. Porter and Ms. Caffey, didn't have any actual evidence of racial discrimination. No stories, no pattern, no slurs, no negative statements on which a reasonable jury could have decided that this was a case of racial discrimination rather than just friction or dislike between employees in the workplace.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Seeing no questions, thank you, counsel. We'll give you back 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just briefly. Vivian Porter, Joint Appendix 331. For instance, when Mr. Martinez approached Ms. Check, or vice versa, the conversation was civilized, but not once can I recall the time when Ms. Houston and Ms. Check engaged in a conversation which did not include some type of quarrel. That evidence is just as probative as the evidence in Joukowsky.
No, in Joukowsky, and I looked while you were opposing counsel, there was opinion, but there was also the statement backing it up that at meetings when a comment came from women, he turned aside. When they came from men, he followed up. You don't have something here that has the line drawn that you had there. You have evidence that she may have not gotten along or she may have been mean to the subordinate, but you don't have anything other than opinion that was because of race, do you?
Well, in Joukowsky, they didn't have any other than opinion.
I just said Joukowsky specifically had testimony that said he thought that the employer was discriminatory against women because at meetings, if a woman made a comment, he turned it aside. If a man made a comment, he followed up on it.
And
Ms.
Porter has said under oath that when she spoke to Mr. Martinez in one way and she spoke to Ms. Houston in another.
Okay.
And that is the same thing I submit to you, Your Honor.
I want to understand the constructive discharge relationship between that and the hostile workplace argument. So as I understand the law, you have to win the hostile workplace in order to win the constructive discharge. That is, constructive discharge requires an additional element. Is that right?
I would agree with that, John.
Okay.
And just to talk about a couple other things that...
I'll give you another minute. Go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I don't even need that. The defendant's staff, African-American staff, was inherited from the other company. So that is not probative in one way or the other about whether they were an equal opportunity employer. Number two, the fact that Mr. Howe distinguished between whether the disparate treatment was a result of Ms. Check and the defendant treating holdovers differently from the people they brought to the contract is belied by the fact that Jose Martinez was a holdover, too. And if that was the case, then she would have treated Mr. Martinez in a similar fashion. But she didn't. I submit, Your Honor, that that Ms. Houston has proffered substantial evidence of falsity and independent evidence of racial bias, and enough to entitle her to her day in court before a jury. Thank you so much.
Thank you, counsel. Case is submitted. Call the next case.